Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll continue with our exploration into ultimate wellness. First up, biological dentistry. How can we look at the inside of our bodies and glands and organs and see that there is a connection between what's going on there and what's happening, well, in other places, such as our liver, our lungs, our kidneys? Most people just think what's in the mouth belongs to the mouth. Not true. My first guest is Dr. Victor Zeiens. Zeiens, he's been practicing holistic dentistry for the past 25 years. He received his doctor in dental science degree from New York University College of Dentistry and is a fellow of the American Academy of Dentistry. He uses kinesiology, aromatherapy, homeopathy, and nutritional counseling in his holistic dental practice. He's the author of the book, Healthy Mouth, Healthy Body. Nice to have you with us today, Vic. You there?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Recent studies have shown that there are possible links between gum disease and other health problems. Explain the connection between bacteria in the mouth and these other diseases in the body.
Well, what we're finding now and what we really have known for quite a while is that the things that happen in your mouth are really symptomatic of what's going on in your body. For instance, when your body chemistry is off, your mouth becomes too acidic and the bacteria population changes. And studies have shown, for instance, the American Academy of Periodontology did a study in 1997 showing that the infection and inflammation caused by periodontal disease is significant in increasing the risk for coronary heart disease. In 1997, a British journal also showed a causal relationship between gum disease and increase in heart problems. And in New York Times in February 1998, they published a study by the University of Minnesota which showed a link between, again, gum disease and cardiovascular problems. A study in Germany showed that if you have a gum problem, and probably 90% of our population, adult population, does, you have three times the risk of getting a stroke. So this is not something that we're just still talking about holistically. It's finally come to the attention of people that, yes, your mouth is connected to the body. And the mouth is really the early warning sign of it. For instance, if I said to you that I'm going to a party after this broadcast and you're not invited and you got upset about that, within an hour, just by the stress that that causes, we can find changes in your gum tissue that are indicative of an infection. And you take the diet that the average person in this country eats, you add on stress, and it's no wonder that we have so many epidemics of so many things that we shouldn't have problems with at all if you eat right and live right.
Okay, we know that calcium is important for strong teeth and bones, but the other vitamins and minerals play just as important a role in the health of a person's mouth. Why don't you list and describe some of the common signs of poor oral health and nutritional deficiencies they're related to?
Okay. If you're missing iron, it'll show up usually as a smooth, shiny tongue and with pale lips, and your gum tissue will look kind of pale, and you'll have sores at the edge of your mouth. If you're missing magnesium, your gum tissue can be inflamed. If you're missing vitamin A, you'll get gum inflammation and yeast infections in the mouth with a reduced ability to taste things. If you're missing vitamin B2, riboflavin, you'll get shiny red lips, a sore tongue, and cracks and sores in the corners of your mouth. If you're missing vitamin B3, the tip of your tongue will tend to be red and swollen, and the edges will be dry and smooth. You'll get sores, and you'll also just have pain. Vitamin B6 would give you sore, burning pain in the mouth and sores at the edge again in the mouth and smooth tongue. Vitamin B12 will give you bad breath. It's surprising how many people actually have B12 deficiencies, and you may have numbness and bleeding gums at the same time. Vitamin C is well known for bleeding gums and just getting infections in the mouth. Vitamin D is a problem with softening of the bones and teeth, where you wind up having children come in with a lot of decay, or even adults, where normally you wouldn't get decay in a population over 40. They'll have that if they're having D deficiencies. Vitamin K would also be yeast infections and increased bleeding, and zinc would be loss of tongue sensations, loss of taste. Dry mouth is very common with zinc deficiencies. Now, the other things that we find with that, which is indicative of what's going on in the body, is what we call tongue diagnosis. For instance, if your tongue is white, it usually means that toxins are coming out. If your tongue is gray or grayish-green, it's usually a liver or gallbladder problem. And if it's brownish or brownish-gray, it could be stomach or small and large intestines. So you can get a very broad overview as to what's going on with someone just by seeing the condition of their mouth.
Sometimes people are reluctant to see a dentist until they actually feel a toothache. What is the primary cause of toothaches, and what are some of the natural herbal remedies for toothaches that you might suggest? And also, what types of diagnostic and treatment tools might you find at a holistic dentist that a conventional dentist would not use?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the primary cause of a toothache is that the nerve is irritated. It could be infected, it could be bruised, but it's your tooth responding that something is wrong. And the way we have learned, or our bodies respond to us, is by pain. There are a number of things that you can take if you can't see a dentist for temporary relief, one of which is clove oil. You place a little bit on a piece of cotton and leave it on for a little while, and you'll find that the relief should be pretty rapid and could last up to an hour. Garlic and myrrh can be crushed together and rubbed onto the tooth, or you'd be better off purging the two tinctures, mixing them together, and then using that as a mouth rinse. You can make a mix of calendula, chamomile, echinacea, deep propolis, and mix those herbs, use the powder this time, with a little bit of water until the solution's muddy, and then take that with your finger and apply it directly to the tooth. Licorice is good for relief in area of pain. You just take a tea where you use 1 to 1.5 grams of the powder to roughly a half cup of water, steep it for 5 minutes, and you can use that as a rinse. Another one that's pretty good is ginger and slippery elm, where you can use the tinctures of both and, again, rinse that with a half cup of water or make a powder. Powder would be the same thing. Use a gram of the combination of the two with another half cup of water, steep for 5 minutes with boiled water, and then use that in your mouth as just a rinse. Or you can use chamomile. It's very good with a tincture. And some of the ones I like the best are white willow, rosemary, hartsense, skullcap, valerian, ginger, and red raspberry. We make a combination of those, equal amounts of each, and you mix it. When I say equal amounts, it shouldn't come out to more than 2 grams for all of them. And you mix that with a cup of water, make a tea, and you can just, again, swish that in your mouth and you'll feel better. Or white oak and golden seal. And you can also use tamarack with that. And that will also reduce pain and swelling. That's good to use if you can get the tinctures. It's a better way to go. And then just dilute the tinctures with a little bit of water, not very much. And again, put that in that area. And that should help you relieve pain for a while until you can see a dentist. Now, another thing to bear in mind is that when a tooth is bothering you, each tooth is related to an organ in the body. For instance, your wisdom teeth are related to your heart and your stomach. Your eye teeth, which are your canine teeth, are not really eye teeth. They're more related to the eye, but they're also related to the liver and the bile ducts and the gallbladder. So it may also be that your tooth is warning you that something else in your body is going on at the same time. In terms of diagnostic tools, that's a very good question, because dentistry, unfortunately, is still dentistry, and we all need to really be doing state-of-the-art equipment, which doesn't happen. One of the things you should find in a holistic practice is the new digital x-ray machines, which give off 90% less radiation than the older ones. And one of the things that we have our patients do is do a nutritional program of supplements that they start a few days before the visit and a few days after to protect against x-rays. And one of the things that you should be taking would be, I'll give you a little list here. It's beta-carotene with the entire carotene complex, which should be 5,000 IUs. Pycnogenol, 100 milligrams. Coenzyme Q10, 100 milligrams. Vitamin E with the mixed dictaphorols, 400 IUs. Selenium, 150 micrograms. And vitamin C, 500 milligrams four times a day. And as I said, you should take that a few days before and a few days afterwards. Now, other things that we use in the offices are kinesiology to test the teeth, aromic therapy, which is a very simple thing. You know, most people are really nervous going to the dentist. If you bring a little vial of lavender oil and you just have the dentist place that on your bib when you sit down for your exam, you'll find that you're a lot calmer. It's very soothing, it helps heal things, and it's also a nice calming herb. We do acupuncture, and this is something else you can use for reducing the pain of a toothache. If you just look at your hand and see where the webbing comes together in your hand between your thumb and your first finger, there's a little spot you press down just in front of the bone there. It's called the Hoku point. And if you rub it on whichever side, in other words, your left side, if your left side's hurting, or your right side, if your right side is hurting, that will also help alleviate toothache pain. I can't tell you how many parties I've been at in the past few years where someone's come over and I spent a half an hour doing that, and then their pain goes away, and it makes the party a lot better. Few other things that we do in the office are using magnets, where we use the North Pole on the magnets for healing. And one of the other things that we're doing now, besides biocompatible root canal filling material, is also injecting ozone into the roots of the teeth before we do the filling, because it's a good way of getting rid of bacteria. So what you want to find in a holistic office is a sense that your mouth is connected to the body, and by treating the mouth, you also have to take into consideration what's going on in the rest of the body and start using biocompatible materials. For instance, it's been known, and I think you and I first talked about this in 1978, that mercury was a real problem. And now it's finally hit the general public that, yes, these things are poisonous and need to come out. So you should never find anything like that in someone's office that's holistic. Though I understand now a lot of people are advertising that say they're holistic and really aren't. So these are things you should ask before you go see someone. And the whole gist of this is that the dentist should be taking you as an individual into consideration and putting your body back in balance. That's really what this is all about. That besides repairing the damage that's going on in the mouth, we're balancing things so that the symptoms, which are the problems in the mouth, don't come back.
Okay. Well, you've given us a lot there, and all the different ways we can help ourselves. There is one other question I have for you, Vic, and that is, which herbs do you tend to recommend most often because you found they've been most compatible with helping people overall with their dental problems?
I find a combination of golden seal, echinacea, calendula, aloe, and grapefruit seed extract, and walnut are some of the best herbs that you can take. You can use that as a mouth rinse, and it'll really keep your gums in good shape and keep your mouth nice and healthy. We used to do garlic and myrrh and cayenne pepper and golden seal. This is back in around 1980, and I tell patients, you know, it'll turn your teeth yellow after a while, but it'll keep you away from having gum surgery, which I always thought was a little crazy anyway, because it's the only area in the body where people have infections and they cut it away rather than heal it. So that always struck me as a little odd, and that actually fostered one of my interests in herbs and doing things naturally. And we find by using that kind of combination that you no longer need surgery. You can actually take care of your mouth yourself and not have anyone cut away your gums. You can just get rid of your infection. But that's what I would recommend very strongly. I would follow that by cinnamon, fenugreek and sesame, which is also a nice one, where you use two parts of cinnamon to one part fenugreek and one part sesame oil. The first one I mentioned, just get equal parts of everything, mix it together, and with a little water, equal amount of water to the amount of herbs, and use that as a rinse. And you'll find both of those are pretty good for keeping your mouth generally in good shape.
Well, I appreciate you being on. My guest, Dr. Victor Zions, and he is the author of Healthy Mouth, Healthy Body, a holistic dentist. And you can also get him at www.matdent.com. Now, if you just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. Let's take an exploration and deal with some of the issues you may not be aware of. Every day, when I get up early, I review all the scientific literature from around the world, plus important social issues, environmental issues, things that really make a difference. Then I look at how they've been covered. Have they really been covered objectively, or is there kind of like a bias and a slant in them? And I'm going to just show you the difference of how some of this stuff is covered. Yes, I did get a lot of emails of people sending me over something that was in a column about the New Jersey Star Ledger. It was a feature that explained that sugar can be a part of a healthy diet and that even if you're diabetic, I will deal with that on tomorrow, the next day's show. But today, let me start with looking at a study that claimed a link between nuclear power plants and cancer. And this was from one of the wire services. From Anovoa. I'll quote it. The radiation experts say he has evidence that people living in the shadow of nuclear power plants stand a high risk of developing cancer. Dr. Chris Busby found that children in Shepistow in South Wales are 11 times more likely to develop myeloid leukemia than the national average. This town is just 5 miles from the Oldbury Nuclear Power Station on the banks of the River Severn, which has been found to contain high levels of radioactive particles. Myeloid leukemia is a very rare form of cancer, which is strongly associated with radiation. A study by Dr. Busby shows that 3 cases of this rare cancer were discovered in children up to the age of 4 in this town. Compared to a national average, that would be astronomical. He also shows that children in this town run a higher risk of developing all cancers by 350%. And campaigners believe the findings are comparable with the Sellafield leukemia clusters that were highlighted in the 1990s. And it was published by the Wells Cancer Registry. Now, isn't it interesting that here we have another foreign country? Here's the take on this. They're doing more to determine the association between cancers, including leukemia, which is a form of cancer, around nuclear power plants than we are in the United States. The only people interested in finding out if we have a connection between cancer and radiation are activists. And by the way, I want to comment on that. I'm always seeing in the press where, for some reason, the guy at Page Six seems to have an attitude issue with Alex Baldwin, the actor. And then he's presented as being this kind of loose cannon. Not from my perspective. Of all the actors, and there are some who are very conscientious in helping causes, he has done so much for letting the world know through his press conferences that he has been asked to attend, and he does, no matter where they're at or what time. Virtually every press conference for the Tooth Fairy Project, which is examining the teeth of children to determine the amount of low-level radiation in their bodies and how that will affect their immune system, that is sponsored by Dr. Jay Gould and Dr. Ernst Sternglass and others. He has always been there. And and not only has he been there, he really does his homework. One of the few people that can have more than a superficial conversation with you. So from my point of view, as far as standing up and doing something in this country to inform people about the dangers of low-level radiation and contaminants within our environment, good for him. An absolutely outstanding social activist on those issues, environmental activist. For those who have not appreciate what kind of manipulation goes on in the mass media. Because, after all, the media is what you use to sell a message. And unfortunately, it's not selling healthy messages. It's selling messages like this. This comes from Shankar Vandanam, the Washington Post staff writer. I'll quote this. Renamed Prozac fuels women's health debate. The woman in the television ad tries to pull a grocery shopping cart from a line. It refuses to budge. She yanks with increasing ferocity as her frustration mounts. It's that week before your period, a voice and tones, the irritability, mood swings, bloating. Think it's PMS? Think again. It could be PMDD. The ad is for Seraphin, a new psychiatric medicine designed to treat premenstrual dysphoric disorder. That's PMDD, a severe version of premenstrual syndrome said to afflict millions of American women. Trouble is, psychiatrists haven't decided whether PMDD is real, and the medicine isn't new. Seraphim is the antidepressant Prozac, renamed and repackaged as a pink and lavender capsule. Sales of Seraphim have soared, spurred by a multi-million-dollar marketing campaign by the drugs maker Eli Lilly, which is searching for profitable new uses for Prozac. The drug's patent expires in August, and the price is expected to fall. The campaign has reignited debate over whether PMDD stigmatizes women by characterizing them as having a mental illness once a month, and raised concerns that Eli Lilly's advertising barrage promotes that notion. Quote, saying it over and over legitimizes it. It makes the condition valid. When it is not valid and gets in the mind of everyone, that is, this condition is a valid condition, unquote, said Sally Servino, a psychiatrist who helped advise the American Psychiatric Association on the disorder. The more you repeat something, the more you believe it. Here's my take on it. Having studied extensively the pharmacological reactions within women who use many of the medications that they're told are necessary, including human growth hormone, and the estrogen replacement therapies, and the tranquilizers, diuretics, weight loss products, as well as the surgical procedures like hysterectomy and radical mastectomy, there is no, let me underline this, there is no condition such as premenstrual dysphoric disorder. It does not exist. Just like ADD and ADHD, it does not exist. But that doesn't deter Eli Lilly or the newspapers or television stations and radio stations, billboard companies that will open up the public to be exposed to this. In the end, it is the media that is the vehicle which so much of this is done. Quite simply, the media is the ultimate pimp in society. They allow manufacturers to sell products that clearly have not been in the public interest. And when you take a look, and I'm doing that right now, I'm taking a look at all the products that were heavily popularized in the mass media as we must have, great for us, do the right job, and in the end were terrible. It is phenomenal how many products we're talking about. So for the women in the audience, or the men who might be able to share some input with the women in your lives, do not let them be misled by a pseudoscientific bunch of opportunists who have no concept of what it is to really help a person who's mentally ill, and that psychiatrist, or for that matter, therapist. By the way, I'm doing an investigative report now on a group of therapists, and will hopefully be able to complete this in the near future, just showing you how dangerous they can be. And in point of fact, we are taking some cases of people who were told, convinced, cajoled into believing that they had repress memory of events that occurred earlier in their life. And in just one case, a therapist, later supported by a psychiatrist, stated that clearly this person had been sexually abused and that they simply had not been able to remember it because the trauma had been repressed. This person went on to condemn their parents, specifically their father, for doing this, and made a lot of it, went all over the country, became a poster person for, you know, the repressed memory. And then a member of the family brought some documents to this person's attention showing that the father had been overseas serving in the armed forces for the period of time that all this supposedly happened. Then the person began to go through some rethinking and realized when started interviewing family members that, yes, the person you're accusing wasn't even here at all. And then realized that there was no sexual abuse. There was no being used by the father. But what had been done, there had been abuse by the psychiatrist and therapist, convincing someone that they had experienced something they did not. We have a lot of crackpot charlatan therapists out there. In this case, these people are going to be brought up on some charges. But how do you undo the damage of having condemned publicly over and over and over again your own family? So I'm doing an investigation on this right now, looking at the whole industry of therapy and what it's done, the pros and cons. I'm doing that as a part of a special investigation. And a lot of people use it to hide from their own realities. Anyhow, that's to come. But this is just one more reason why, if you're a psychiatrist, you suffer from, clearly, from this premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and you need to take this Seraphin, you'll say, well, that's just Prozac, and that's a psychiatric disorder, and I don't have a psychiatric disorder, and I'm not going to take it. You have a right to do that. You have a right not to believe what the mainstream media tries to tell you is important. Because after all, if you see it on CBS, if you see it on ABC, if you see it advertised during the nightly news, you're likely to believe that, well, it must be legitimate. The networks wouldn't allow it on if it weren't. Just to the contrary. On to another issue here. Key breast cancer study was a fraud. This comes from Thomas Mall and Rosie Mestel of Times Medical Writers. I'll quote, "A key study pointing to the effectiveness of high-dose chemotherapy and bone marrow transplants in treating breast cancer was based upon faked data, cancer experts say. The American Society of Clinical Oncology announced unscrupulous researcher Dr. Warner Burtz had misrepresented thousands of women with breast cancer and had convinced them to undergo his debilitating, often fatal bone marrow transplants. His fraudulent scheme testing the controversial procedure found that it didn't work. Quote, Bezwada duped us all, said Dr. Larry Norton, the president-elect of the major society. The new revelations, according to the Oncology Society, show that none of the data that was spent all over the world in all the major universities cannot be believed. Now, what's it mean for the average person, people listening right now? What it means is that, once again, when women have undergone, in this country, at $100,000 each, 30,000 women, this study shows that, quote, 20% of the women died as a direct result of the treatment. That's an awful lot of people. 20% of 30,000 people, 6,000 women died of the treatment. Well, there's so much fraud in science, so much control over the outcome in science. That's from the Los Angeles Times. But that's what happens now. Let me extend that. So here's a scientist publishing a result saying that a certain type of chemotherapy and bone transplant for certain types of cancer, breast cancer, is going to help you. Publishes some data in peer-reviewed journal. People carry it as if it's real. Women go out and get the procedure done, and they die. Or it's not effective, and they don't die. In this case, both happen. They died, and it was not effective. And only by accident does someone finally figure out that it was wrong, and then the person is finally held up. How many aren't held up? I was given a barrage of information about would I give, you know, Suzanne Summers some input about, you know, her post-surgical and radiation therapy. She had breast cancer. She had her cancer removed. She had follow-up radiation as her preventative for reoccurring. Then they wanted to give her chemotherapy. Well, last week on our show, I cited exact studies from their own cancer journals showing that that kind of chemotherapy does not increase the lifespan of a person. And not only that, but I also showed you all the devastating side effects of that, that is worse than not doing anything in that case. And instead, she had taken one simple nutritional supplement. She had taken a mistletoe. And they just railed on and on and on about how irresponsible it was for a woman who had gone through orthodox procedures, had her chemotherapy, had her radiation, had her surgery, but was wanting to do one thing for herself. And quite frankly, I don't think it would have mattered had she said, I'm taking vitamin C or I'm taking some carrot juice. If she'd have taken one thing, no matter what it was, they'd have said, but you're not taking tamoxifen. You must take tamoxifen. It's going to help you prevent that breast cancer from occurring. And so what I did is I cited 47 articles from peer-reviewed journals showing tamoxifen is worthless and dangerous and should never have been used. It should be banned. So they're wrong everywhere you look. They're just nothing but wrong on everything. They're wrong when it comes to the advice they're giving on these issues. So the question is, would a person like her go towards a more holistic protocol to ensure that her immune system is strong enough not to develop a secondary cancer? No, she's going towards chemotherapy. Evidently, they have convinced her not to try her mistletoe. And to suggest that one single item, without examining all the other things in her lifestyle, she'd bring out some new candy line, and you can imagine kind of lifestyle. And it's just ridiculous. So, you know, there's no interest there on her part of learning all the things one must do to make sure the cancer does not reoccur. But I am going to be setting aside time later this week to do an entire segment on, for those of you who would like to know what a post-surgery holistic protocol for breast cancer would be, so you don't get the breast cancer back. What is the greatest probability of it not returning? And I'll give you an entire A to Z protocol. But enough from Suzanne Summers. Let's go to Cheryl Gay Stolberg. This is an article from Washington, from the New York Times, and it says, quote, scientists who report research findings are expected to divulge any financial ties that might influence their work. But often they do not. According to the first comprehensive analysis of disclosure policies in science and in reviewing 61,000 scholarly articles published in 181 academic journals in 1 year, 1997, researchers at Tufts University and the University of California found that just 0.5% detailed personal financial interests, including consulting arrangements, honorariums, expert witness fees, company equity and stock, and patents. All of those few disclosures appeared in just a third of the 181 journals. Well, what does that mean? What it means is this, that 99.5% of all the people who are writing articles, you'll never know what their financial involvements are. So I decided to take a little look. I have hundreds of thousands of studies in my database. And I remember there was a time when there was a major movement with William Duffy's Sugar Blues, and I'd preceded that with Body Pollution, which was a big bestseller. And the whole book was about what's wrong with the American diet. And one of the chapters was on sugar. And it was more than a coincidence that just after my book came out and then Dufty books came out and we're both hitting hard on sugar, there's a major effort across the country to get people to say, sugar is good for you. Nothing's wrong with it. In fact, I was on NBC's Bob Kane show debating Elizabeth Whaling of the American Council on Science and Health, where she was claiming it was good. And I brought all these articles showing it was linked to heart disease and cancer and diabetes and whatnot. Well, the effort to support sugar got a big boost when, later that year, from a peer-reviewed journal came a study that said that, you know, it caused no problems. I said, that just couldn't be. It just couldn't be. If it was a well-designed study, it would have to show it. So I went to the library. I got the actual study, got the protocols, and then started to contact the people associated and found out the entire study, the whole study, beginning to end, including all the scientists associated, were from one of the largest candy makers in England. Well, if your bread and butter in your business is making candy, which is i.e. mainly sugar, and you do a study, then you design a study to fail. And no one's going to ask you the quality of your design. No one's going to go in and look at the actual details. In a lot of studies that fail, you never hear of, because the people who paid for the study don't want you to know that there was a mistake, there was a failure. They only want to have you here when there's some possible way they can turn even tiny little figures into monster headlines. So just to let you know, an awful lot of science is junk science, controlled, manipulated, and even a recent FDA task force on looking into Prozac was totally biased by people who had gross conflict of interest, and they should have recused themselves, and they did not. They had direct financial contact with one of the companies that made Prozac. Well, how much more of a conflict of interest can you have? You're making money from the makers of Prozac, Eli Lilly, and now you're asked to sit on an FDA advisory board to determine, is Prozac safe and effective? Well, what are you going to say? No, I don't want to work for them anymore. I want to have all my grants canceled. I'm going to say we don't need it. No. No, it's not going to work that way. So, now we have just so much lies, deception in science. This comes from the Globe. Now, why this story is important is because there was a big movement up in Quebec. Our president, all the major presidents were there in this hemisphere. And they talked about world trade and the importance of world trade. And virtually every major network that showed anything on the demonstrations made it look like these were rowdy, drunks, irresponsible people. No one actually said, what are they trying to say? Do they have any legitimacy in their concern? Should we pay attention? Should we at least engage and see what arguments they're putting forward? Not one. This comes from Sinclair Stevens, and I'll quote it. A police state in the making. Our government forgot to practice what it preaches, says Sinclair Stevens, when it trampled democracy in Quebec City. I never thought I'd be writing this article, surely not in Canada. There aren't many people in this country who view free trade as positively as I do. As industry minister in the Mulroney government, I participated in the 1985 Shamrock Summit that set the stage for our trade agreement with the United States. I was even responsible for replacing the Foreign Investment Review Agency with Investment Canada, a welcome mat for our partners in the South. There also aren't many people who view the maintenance of law and order as a high priority as I do. But this past weekend, I was shocked by the events in Quebec City, shocked by what I saw, and stunned by what my wife Noreen and I personally experienced. I believe Canada's right to view free trade as a model for democratic development in every corner of our hemisphere, and I was delighted to see us host the Summit of the Americas. But our government is dead wrong to behave in a manner that suggests we've forgotten what democracy is all about. Noreen and I arrived in Quebec City last Friday, 5 p.m. We had heard about the so-called security fence and wanted to see it firsthand, to walk along beside it. My first view of the fence was in front of the Chateau Frontenac. It brought back memories of many happy visits to that hotel, but this weekend I could not enter. The hotel was inside the fence. I was outside. As we walked around the perimeter, a 40-year-old chap passed us and asked, "Where's your gas mask?" I asked, "What do you mean?" He said, "There's gas further on. Watch out." We continued until we saw our first contingent of riot-geared police lined up three deep behind a closed gate. They were an intimidating sight, in battle dress, with helmets, masks, shields, and assorted elaborate weapons. I was glad this time that they were the inside the fence and we were outside. Farther on, just before we got to Durfin Street, there were perhaps 50 people, protesters it turned out, who were standing or sitting on a small side road. At the end of the road, we saw a much larger group of riot police standing shoulder to shoulder, several rows deep. The road was well away from the security fence. In fact, the fence was nowhere in sight. I spoke with many of the people in the street, asked them why they had gathered, why they opposed the free trade proposals. It was a lively but friendly exchange. We were interrupted as the police down the street began an eerie drumming, rattling their riot sticks against the shields. Slowly, in unison, 1 6-inch step at a time, they began marching towards us. Noreen and I moved to the side of the street as the protesters remained stationary. Some formed V signs with their fingers. To my horror, the police then fired tear gas canisters directly at those sitting or standing on the road. As clouds of gas began to spread, Noreen and I felt our eyes stinging and our throats bake. We pulled whatever clothing we could across our mouths. One young woman who had been among the protesters offered us some vinegar. "What's that for?" I asked. "It takes away the sting," she added, and it did help. The police, however, kept advancing. One large policeman with the number 5905 on his helmet pressed right against me and ordered me to get behind the railing. "I haven't done anything," I protested. "Why?" He simply said, "Get behind the rail." Then he added, "And get down." So I did. I shook my head. I never thought I would see this kind of police state tactic in Canada. What we witnessed that night was mild compared to events next afternoon. This time, walked along the fence until we reached the gate at Rene Boulevard, where a great crowd had gathered that included TV cameras and reporters. I was asked for an interview by a CBC crew, but before we began, dozens of tear gas canisters were fired. Water cannons were sprayed, and rubber bullets began to hit people nearby. Three times, I felt I could not breathe. My eyes were sore, and all I could do was run. In the bedlam, my wife and I were separated for almost 3 hours. She said she had almost passed out from the gassing. We lost something else. Besides each other last weekend in Quebec, our innocence. This government reporters, like the brand the Quebec City demonstrators called hooligans, that is not fair. I talked to dozens of them, mostly university students, age about 20. They came to Quebec not to have a good time, as some suggest, but to express their well-thought-out views on a subject that is important to them, to all of us. I may not agree with their position, but I sure believe in their right to express it. The police had no cause to violently suppress it. Some will say that a handful of demonstrators got out of hand and forced the police to take collective action. I cannot agree with that. The police action in Quebec City under orders from our government was a provocation itself, an assault on all of our freedoms. And this is from Sincere Stevens, Minister of Regional Industrial Expansion, was a member of Parliament from 1972 to 1988. Now, you didn't see this anywhere, and you didn't read it anywhere. And the unfortunate part for most people in this audience is that sometimes we forget about issues that are occurring elsewhere that will impact upon us. And it's the media. The way the media almost always, no matter what it is, the war in Bosnia was slanted. Against Yugoslavia, slanted. The war everywhere is controlled and manipulated. I even got a report yesterday that talked about the bombing of our reconnaissance spy ship at the beginning of the Israeli and Arab world and what really happened and what was hidden by Lyndon Johnson and McNamara about the truth of that. Every day, as an investigative journalist, I'm always getting besieged by people who have stories and tips and inside information. And you don't appreciate how little truth we're actually exposed to, especially by our major media. We are not told that there is a legitimate concern about GATT and NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, and that these issues need a proper major forum, one where people representing the various views can come forward and state, here's why we believe in this free trade and GATT and NAFTA, and those can come forward and say, but here's why we oppose it. And instead of attacking one another put their ideas out on the table and let the public decide which, if any of them, makes sense. Right now, people won't oppose something that they're not aware is a problem. They're not aware of the Codex Alimentarius. My audience is, and about 14,000 of you thus far, and I thank you, have responded by showing your protest. But the vast majority of Americans are not aware. They're not aware their freedoms of choice are being undermined. And in time, whether it's a year or 2 years, mark my words, the day will come when you will not be able to buy a supplement. Now, if you ask your legislator today, they'll say, not true. We have laws in place. Our sovereignty is assured. And I'm willing to say, I'll bet they change that position when faced with the reality of trade sanctions from other countries. When the pressure's on, the dollar always wins. Always. So now it's just a matter of waiting. And hopefully most of you will be healthy enough that when all this does occur, you'll be able to survive well enough without a lot of this stuff. But it will happen. It's inevitable. Because not enough people are willing to protest. In fact, go to any of the protests and see if you see your neighbor there. How many people are from the suburbs there? How many people from Park Avenue there? You can count them on one hand in a year. Now, you'll generally find minority individuals, or you'll find some, and you'll find college students, or people who have not yet had a vested interest in something and are afraid to lose it and have not yet signed the social contract. This is for the reward we're going to give you. We expect obedience. Just go ahead with your life. Do the best you can. But do not second judge our capacity to lead, guide, and direct your lives. And as long as you've got your own personal issues, don't concern yourself with these bigger issues. And the only people are just kind of irresponsible rascals that don't have any power anyhow. After all, they're counterculture, and counterculture has never been something we pay attention to if we're mainstream. And hence, you start seeing no matter what the issue is, the same people keep protesting, and the same people do not. The media covers the stories the same way. Will never take the time to actually challenge the people that are in positions of authority with the arguments that are given by those people protesting. We really should have a channel. If Bill Gates wanted to do something truly meaningful with some of his money, because vaccinating kids in Africa with $100 million is not a good idea. But he could buy a debate channel, a public forum channel, 24 hours a day, program it for people to go forward and put up important social issues, human rights issues. Right now, if we talk about what's going on in human rights violations, there's no place for people to know this, to see it. Who's going to call Amnesty International? Who's going to call the Rights of Human League of Human Rights? Who knows where their phone number? Who knows what they've got in their files? There are hundreds of millions of words written, stuff done, you know, white papers and people's files, and the average person doesn't see it. We just don't have the forums to allow advocacy of different positions. I think that's something we're missing. And if you're waiting for the American media to do it, forget it. In fact, it's interesting, when I do watch the news, I never watch any of the network news. Never. It's pathetic. It's an embarrassment. It's beyond sophomoric. I have to watch the BBC news. I have to watch the independent international news just to get an idea of something in the way of truth. This comes from Maggie Fox of the Health and Science Correspondent. Reuters, quote, a new therapy developed by Genentech for treating cancer by starving out tumors has shown troubling side effects. Four people died, experienced sudden bleeding in their lungs. The researchers said they were scrambling to find out whether there was something special about those patients and said they hoped there would be a way to identify such patients in advance, keep them from future trials, known as anti-VEGF. The treatment, which uses a targeted antibody against one of the proteins that tumors use to grow and spread, has been highlighted at the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Researchers say they are still impressed by how the drug, known formerly as monoclonal antibody targeted against vascular endothelial cell growth factor, works. Here's my point on this. This is a genetically engineered product, once again, for people dead that we know of. Will there be any action? No. Against the company, Genentech? No. Will there be any shortages of doctors recommending patients to sign up for this? No. They'll still try, in their own spin control, to find some way of convincing the American public that this is in their best interest. Now, what is in the American public's best interest is to challenge your legislator to hold special hearings where the FDA, the National Academy of Science, the Pan Am Health Organization would come together and allow someone like myself, who's very knowledgeable on this topic, let me go in and ask appropriate and responsible questions about why they do not take Dr. Lawrence Burton's immunomodulating therapy and put it to the test. Give 100 patients cross-match for types of cancer, stage of the cancer. Give them their therapy, whatever they choose to use, and then give the other 100 Dr. Burton's therapy. And then look at the results. Now, the only way this is ever going to happen, so we no longer have all these genetic engineering companies coming up with things that are killing people or making it worse, and not one of them has had a cure. Not one has had a success. Not one. But Burton's has cured people. In fact, I would go down to his clinic. I spend a long time there. I go through all the records, call the patients, and say, and I had to choose patients who had had treatment for at least 5 years. Get them to get their current medical workups done and speak with those doctors, look at the x-rays, look at all this and say, before they were terminal, 5 years later, they're alive and well with no cancer. Burton was not an organized person. He was brilliant. He saved lives. But he didn't do details. And he tended to be battle wary. He had been hit enough times by the mainstream establishment that he was very super sensitive. I watched a lot of his patients who gave up all hope until they got to him recover. Now, no, he wasn't able to help everyone. None of the alternative cancer therapies can. But virtually everything that the Pan Am Health Organization, everything that the Carter White House, everything the National Cancer Institute said about him was wrong. Absolutely dead wrong. Because we would take every allegation about his clinic. He doesn't have autoclave equipment the National Cancer Institute would put out. Well, I went down and photographed his autoclave equipment. And he doesn't have MDs working for him. Well, we talked with the doctors, MDs, and showed these are, you know, Dr. Clement. Here's an MD, board certified. Well, he has no records. Well, we took all of his case reports on mesothelioma, and he had the highest success rate that can be independently confirmed for mesothelioma, which is almost always a fatal cancer of the lungs due to exposure to asbestos. And here were five-year survivals with no cancer in the body. Well, he didn't have open records. He didn't even have a lock on his door. Everybody from all over the world would be coming through there and ask to see his records, and he showed them. So virtually everything they said about him to try to keep him from having any credibility was wrong. And I'd like today to see the Burton immuno-augmentative therapy, which does exactly what this genetically engineered was supposed to do. It enhances the impact of tumor anti-blocking, tumor complement. It enhances the natural killer cell activity and supports natural interferon. All the natural cancer fighters in the body, including the what they're doing here with the antibodies, they're trying to clone a cell that will attack the cancer sheath. He already did it, and his doesn't kill anyone. His doesn't make people sick. Isn't it interesting? They're trying to do what he did 20 years ago with Dr. Friedman, Dr. Castle, and published. Isn't it interesting where they presented their first work? The American Cancer Society. So phenomenal was this work that one of the members of the Sloan Kettering joined their research team to observe them, as did one of the American Cancer Society. The American Cancer Society made him a deal, a paltry deal, to buy out all the research and everything for around, I think it came to around $9,000 for each of the research team. They just said no. And then suddenly, overnight, he went from being invited to American Cancer Society, publishing over 63 different journals, and getting research grants from the Danish Research Fund, U.S. Public Health Service, to becoming on their quack list. Follow the money trail. So I'm suggesting, instead of killing more people like Genentech's capable of doing, in this case has done with their drug, instead of failing again to do anything proper and intelligent about cancer, why recreate something when we already have it? We have Dr. Burton's work, and test it. Put it to the challenge, but do so objectively and fairly. Hard to find someone who's willing to do that, but at least get that stage done. And then let's see if we need to be supporting and subsidizing these billion-dollar industries. We have answers today that can help us. I'm Gary Nall. That brings up the end of another program. Now, for the short term, we will not have any service that can make you duplications of tapes. And hopefully in the next couple weeks, we will be able to get that resolved, and we'll be able to make tapes of our show. Right now we can, so I can't offer you any show tape of the show. I can just say, listen, this week I've got a lot of really, really important programming, including my long-awaited investigative in-depth report on mercury fillings. That is completed. My lawyers are reviewing it. We will have it ready for presentation probably Thursday or Friday this week. Have a nice day, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow.